This is the Perfectly Mentored Podcast with your host, Jason Portnoy. Yeah.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Perfectly Mentored. I'm your host, Jason Portnoy. My guest today is Justin Marshall, the founder of Ad Hoc Media, a Facebook and Instagram media buying agency based out of Brooklyn, New York. He also runs a coaching program for agency owners and e-com brands, teaching them his brilliant methodology. He's managed over $15 million in ad spend, and most importantly, he did so profitably. A man I work super closely with, one of the few people, despite being a competitor, or whatnot, whatever you want to call it these days. One of the few people I talk with, and super fortunate enough to been able to watch him on this incredible journey he's been on from the start all the way up to now. And most importantly, proud to call him a really close friend of mine. So Justin, thank you so much for doing this and welcome.
Thanks, buddy. Glad to be here.
Look, for the people who haven't been able to watch your journey from start to finish and be a part of it like I have, tell us how you got started in the space.
So I went to graduate school for philosophy. I was supposed to be a philosophy professor, but I didn't get into the, so I got my master's and I didn't get into the PhD programs that I wanted. So they're super competitive. There's like 350 applicants and they accept like three per year to like Vanderbilt, Fordham, Emory, places like that. And so I just had to figure out how to make some money. And I was working at bars and restaurants while I was in college and grad school, ended up becoming the general manager / operations manager for a restaurant group in Washington, D.C., where I lived. And I tried to do, I was interested in digital marketing. So I was like, you know, taking all the courses and reading all the groups and in the Loomer group and all the stuff. And I tried to run ads for the restaurant. I just could never really figure out a way to quantify how well it was working. You know, unless you have like a coupon, like show this screenshot to your server for a free appetizer or something. It was kind of hard to make it measurable. So I had a friend of a friend that owned a notebook company in Washington, D.C. And I said, hey, I've been learning all this stuff, but it's not really working for the restaurant. But since you sell stuff on your website, it's all like completely trackable. I would love to test it out. And she said, yeah, sure. And this was like maybe 4.5 years ago at this point. And I just like ran some simple retargeting ads, built a little funnel for them for the holidays. And they ended up selling like $50,000 more in notebooks than they normally did. And she just started referring me to people, her friends. They referred me to other people. And so on and so forth until today.
How has your philosophy background played a role in how you run ads and how you become analytical of everything?
Interesting. I would say it just gave me the confidence to trust my own intelligence and to not make assumptions and to trust my own intelligence and know that I didn't need to listen to what everybody else was saying. If I was doing something and it was working well for me, continue doing it, even if it's not exactly what people were telling you to do in the Facebook groups or in the courses or whatnot. And then just how to look at numbers. You know, we did a lot of logic and stuff in philosophy. So just notice how to like analyze big data, know which metrics to look at, know that, you know, difference between correlation and causation and just making data-driven decisions. So I think those two things, making like really empirically based data-driven decisions and then being confident enough to trust my own intelligence that I can figure this out, even if it's not exactly what everybody else is doing. And that has proven to be pretty good for me over the long road.
You know, you talked about all these different groups and all these different coaches or people coming out there and teaching different styles. How long did it take you to learn to develop that trust in yourself and that gut and saying, you know, I could tune out all this noise. I don't need to hear them. What I know works. Does that purely just come from results, or does that something that happens within that you have to become self-aware of?
A little bit of both, but definitely results for sure. I mean, so I met you when we went to like that mastermind thing in Hawaii like a long time ago. And that was really cool for me because, I mean, as all of us, like we're pretty siloed, right? Like we, a lot of us media buyers, we work from home or at a small agency or something, and we don't really talk to a bunch of other people doing the same thing. Like I didn't know anybody else that was running Facebook and Instagram ads for a living. Like I mean, none of my friends even knew what that was. And so just being by myself, except for my internet friends, made it a little bit difficult to trust my own intuition and intelligence and get over that imposter syndrome because I didn't know where I fit in the herd of people doing this. And then when I went to Hawaii with you, I realized that there were people that I was just as knowledgeable as that were making way more money than me. And they had already quit their full-time jobs and just made it real to me to like sit down with 10 people that actually were doing this full-time. Just made it real. And you and a few other people there really encouraged me to make the jump. And I didn't do it like most, a lot of people were like, you need to quit your job because unless your back's up against the wall, you're never going to start this business. And I'm just a little more risk averse than that. And I didn't quit my job until I was making more money doing this than I was at my full-time job. So a little bit of both, a little bit of internal stuff, a lot of external validation. Like I remember some, it might've been there or somewhere else. Some mindset person was saying like, if you don't have confidence, you can overcome that with courage. And I was like, that is not the way I roll. Like my confidence comes from knowing I'm doing a good job and from having a track record of results. So that's when I really got over the imposter syndrome and started to trust myself was after I just got some great results for some clients and they were happy. And I realized that I could do this and it was totally no bullshit. It was just, I was doing what I knew how to do. It's getting them the results and it felt good.
I'm with you. And I think I'm pretty conservative too as a media buyer. And I think that's kind of the things that, you know, one of the reasons we get along so well. How has being risk averse allowed you to be different as a media buyer and help get your clients more results, right? When we're told in a world of scale, build, spend, you know, it's kind of hard to be the media buyer that sits there and says, hey, I'm going to be risk averse with your money. It's actually almost refreshing for clients to hear sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's how I manage expectations with clients. I actually, we almost got a new client last week. It was down to us and one other agency. And I think we actually lost the client or didn't sign them because I was being so conservative with my expectations for them. Like they were saying, you know, what kind of ROAS do you think we could get? And you know, these other guys are saying they can get us like a 5. And I was like, well, I'm not going to tell you that because I don't know. It's a test and measure environment until we get in there. What I can tell you is you're getting a 1.9 right now. And whoever's running your ads isn't doing a very good job. And there's tons of room for improvement, but I'm not going to promise you a number, you know, because under promise over deliver is always what I say. And sometimes you miss out on a sale because people want to, you know, be sold the dream or whatever. But in the end, it just makes it a lot harder. I would rather tell somebody I can expect a 2.5 times return on ad spend and get them a 3.5 than tell them we can get them a 5 and then have to explain why we only have a 3.5, you know?
So, I mean, and that's the tough part with clients, right? So what would be your advice for e-com brands listening right now when, you know, they want that 5, 7X or 10X? And you know, I almost feel like sometimes pitching our services, sometimes pitching marketing is like pitching like fairy dust. Like we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know how it's going to turn out until we're in there and running, which makes it hard to pitch. Like a website, I could tell you, pay me $10,000 and I'll build you this website and you're going to get this tangible thing when I go with it. Marketing is intangible and, you know, you don't know if you're going to succeed and you just know you're the right person to help them succeed if they can. So what's your advice for e-com brands listening right now when it comes to really analyzing all that or trying to hire an agency?
I mean, on the one hand, it's not tangible, but on the other hand, it is tangible because we have a return on ad spend. We have a pixel that tracks everything that we do, which is why it's an easier sell for me. Like, I don't consider myself a very good salesperson because I couldn't sell a $10,000 website because I don't know what that's going to do for them. Maybe it'll make them more money. Maybe it won't. Maybe the website will look really good and actually convert worse than the old one. I don't know. So,
no, what I mean by that is more like you can't give them a defined result, right? Like there's no like, here's what I guarantee you I could get you. Like guarantees on this platform mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Well, what I do is typically now we're fortunate enough that we don't really work with new brands as much. We usually work with people coming from other bigger agencies that are unsatisfied with the level of service they've been getting. So my sales process always involves doing an audit of their account. And I'm not going to tell somebody that I can improve their results unless I really believe that I can. So I don't necessarily, I'll give them numbers as ballparks because that's what they want. But I look at what's being done and see where I can improve it. And if they're missing 7 out of the 10 things that I think are absolute best practices, then I'm 99% confident that I can increase their results. And I just tell them that. And I've even turned people away before because I've audited their account and said, you know what? Whoever's running your ads is actually doing a pretty decent job. And I wouldn't feel comfortable selling you on the fact that I could massively improve it.
Love it.
They've never heard that. They're like, really? Oh my God, you're a digital marketing guy. You're not just trying to sell me. Like you're just being genuine. And then
if results go down and they're looking for someone, they're going to go to the guy that, you know, didn't try to sell them a pipe dream.
Exactly. Those people have referred me to other people as well. And, you know, I just think this whole industry is so full of people selling pipe dreams that at first I thought that maybe I wasn't, the fact that I was like a little bit less of like a hype man was going to hurt me. But in the end, I think that the people that I do work with, you know, we've talked about this before, like you attract the people that you should, you know? So like, if somebody wants to work with somebody that is like a super cheerleader, Tony Robbins motivational type, like they can find those people, but that's just not who I am. And so the people that end up working with me appreciate that I'm kind of like the no nonsense, no BS guy. And I think that's kind of what I've started to become known for, which is great because I was pretty uncomfortable for a long time, to be honest. Even like branding myself in this industry at all. Cause I was like, I'm not like a weird marketing guru, motivational guy. Like, I don't want to be that. And then I realized that I actually could do it in a way that was more authentic to myself.
And one of the things that makes you refreshing also is if clients could only understand this before going into it is I know you personally. So I could tell, like I could vouch for this because I'm the same way. And we've had long conversation about that is that, man, we take things very personally, right? When results aren't happening, it's hard to sleep. We understand, we're empathetic to the fact that like, hey, you're not just a number with us giving us, you know, X amount of money per month. Like that money is money. Like,
yeah, it's not our money. It's other people's money.
Yeah.
I take being a steward of other people's money very seriously. I mean, it's easy to look in Ads Manager and just feel like you're in an Excel spreadsheet. But if you remember that these are actual real dollars in somebody's bank account that you're spending a lot of.
Which is why I think we both don't like taking startups, right? Because I think we don't like being someone's Hail Mary, someone's last attempt, someone's savior. You're my last $5,000. You're my hope. Mm-hmm. It's a very uncomfortable, like a lot of people don't mind. They'll take the money. I just wouldn't be able to sleep if I couldn't get them results and I lost them their entire business.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night at all. And I just don't work that way. And you know, a lot of agencies, they do a lot of advertising for themselves. We are all referral and we keep a smaller client load so we can give people that level of service. But a lot of agencies spend a lot of money on advertising, scale up their agencies really quickly with a bunch of employees. And then it just becomes like, a numbers game for them where it's like, okay, our client churn rate might be high because most people sign a 3-month contract with us and half of them or 2/3 of them don't renew it, but we've got enough incoming leads in the pipeline that it doesn't matter. And I guess that's one way to run a business, but I don't know. I was going to say it'll probably backfire on your reputation in the end, but even if it doesn't, I just couldn't live that way. So, you know, we take fewer clients, only take like one new client a quarter, really, because people stay with us for a year or a couple of years just because we try to treat them really well and have a one-on-one relationship with them. All my clients have my cell phone number. We've got a Slack, you know, channel for every client. They can get a hold of me. They can get a hold of my team. They feel like, you know, we give them feedback. We collaborate. They feel like they have a one-on-one relationship with us, whereas a lot of other agencies that they've been with in the past, they maybe get sold by somebody like me on the phone, but once they sign that contract, excuse me, they're, you know, shoved off to a recent college grad, inexperienced account manager that can't answer their questions and blames everything on the oh, your ads are still in the learning phase or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that we also talk about a lot is the things we do isn't sexy, right? Like our methodology, your methodology, let's talk about your methodology, isn't sexy. It's not filled with tons of hacks and tactics or secret special audiences that no one knows about. Why do you think so many other media buyers focus on that and chase that versus really developing the unsexy part?
That's a good question. I think people focus on it because it gets a lot of responses from people. Like if you look in the groups, I mean, we keep saying the groups, I don't know, you know, the 5 or 10 large
popular. Which is funny because you started the show with before Hawaii, you knew no other marketers. And now you're referring to them as the groups. Like you're part of all those groups now.
Yeah. And yeah. I don't even really participate in those groups much anymore just because it's just so much of this shiny object.
But you went from an island of isolation to saturate. You went from an island of like isolation of not knowing many people, other media buyers, to like an island of saturation where everyone's a media buyer.
Yeah, at first I felt alone because I didn't know anybody. Now, then I met a bunch of people and chose to be alone.
you're wishing to go back to that first island.
Yeah, exactly. So to answer your question, I think the reason that people talk about all the hacks and the new things and shiny objects, it's because people respond to that in the groups. And then you can sell them your course or you can do whatever. But the people that are probably responding the most and the most vocal in those groups are probably not super successful as media buyers. I mean, if you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars per month on ads for clients or for your own brand, you don't have as much time to be in the Facebook groups talking and answering questions and posing things like all the time. You're just not. So I feel like there's a lot of people that are in it like for a social thing sort of, where it's like maybe they have one client or maybe they're just learning and they're like super, super active. And by the way they post, you would think that they actually know what they're doing. But if you dig a little deeper, you realize that like these people have spent like 10 grand on ads in their whole career, you know?
And so why do these brands then fall for it, right? Why do they fall for the, you know, like everyone knows there's no shortcut, right? You got to put in the work to do things. So why, when it comes to giving someone your money, you fall for, like, do brands end up falling for those tricks?
People don't know that. They should. But people are always looking for a shortcut. They're always looking for the silver bullet, the whatever, the magic pill, whatever you want to say. And I see a lot of people get sold by these people, and it's unfortunate. But it's the fact that they don't really have much of a frame of reference for it or any context. Like they're not in this space. They haven't seen other accounts. They don't know what the industry standards are for a return on ad spend in their niche. They don't, they haven't worked with a lot of other people before. So somebody comes in and tells them, you know, hey, it's a $10,000 setup fee and we'll get you a 5X overnight. And they'll sign it 'cause it sounds really good. And it's sad, and it gives us a bad name because there's a lot of people, any decent small, medium-sized e-commerce brand that you talk to has been burned by a marketer or by an agency, for sure. Most of them have. And it's unfortunate, and it gives us a bad name. But at the same time, it just creates an opportunity for people like us who have a little bit more integrity than that to kind of rise to the top. And I think that's happening more and more over time. You know, like in my coaching program, like it's super not sexy, but people find a lot of value in it because of that. And they're like, oh, we've done all these other masterminds and courses before. Or like the people are kind of like a little bit too much like a cult leader, and it's a little bit too much like I've got the secret sauce. And I'll be the first to tell them, like, I don't have the secret sauce. I've got a lot of checklists and automated rules and systems and funnels that I've used repeatedly over time that I'm confident will work for you, and you can tweak them and customize them at, you know, as appropriate. But yeah, a lot of these people have just been, they're so used to the, again, just kind of like the motivational thing of like the people that are just better at sales than they are at actually media buying, I guess.
Like you just opened up something super important, and we're going to touch on it in a second, but let's talk about this. Why the need to now go into coaching, right? Like you're building up, what's it about? What about teaching other people what you're doing is so important to you?
I like teaching, and I think I'm good at it. I think I have an ability to simplify complex topics and make them relatable and memorable and actionable. So part of it is me probably trying to like relive the fact that I'm not a philosophy professor like I wanted to be. The other part though is that I always dreamed of having a agency with like 30 clients and like making tons of money that way. That was my goal. And then every time I've had more than 12 clients, I am an anxious wreck, and it sucks, and I don't like it. So some of that is about the fact that I wasn't doing as good of a job as I could have with hiring and delegating and things. But even now, I feel pretty on top of, you know, training my team. I have a small team of 3 people. I think they're doing a great job. But even so, if I want to maintain that one-on-one relationship with the clients where I'm actually available and they feel like I'm a collaborator with them on this project, like a growth partner versus just like a contractor or something, I just don't have the time or the bandwidth to have more than like 10 clients at a time. So this was my attempt to figure out a way to make more money by helping people and creating value in another way other than taking on more done-for-you clients, because it's just really hard. And then of course, you know, a done with you thing is a lot more scalable than a done for you thing. So if I can talk to 15 people on a Zoom call and give them advice of things to implement, and then they go do that, and I don't have to project manage my team to actually do it, it's great.
And another thing you touched on was systems, right? About how you have a lot of systems, a lot of checklists, a lot of rules. How important are systems when it comes to running Facebook ads? And, you know, what are some examples of systems you have in place?
Yeah, they're the most important thing that you can do. And again, it's like back to the non-sexy thing. Like when I audit a lot of accounts, and most of them, they fall into either one or two buckets. One is a bigger agency, and they have like a super cookie cutter ad account. They'll just do like one really broad audience, top of funnel, some simple retargeting. They don't update the ads very often. ROAS is 3 one month, 1.9 the next month, 2.5 the next, very variable. And they just kind of like blame that on environmental factors, and the client thinks that's normal, but they're not doing a lot of work. So that's one type of account I see when I do audits, is like a really cookie cutter simplified one that doesn't take much maintenance, does okay, but not great. The other one is people who are in the ad account so much, testing so many different things, that they have no idea what they're doing anymore. You know, it's like people, it's like even some big media buyers, you know, they like, they'll be in there like tweaking stuff all day. Like, oh shit, that didn't work, let's pause that. Or, oh, this one's looking like has some promise, let's quadruple the budget. Or, oh, I turned that one off a few days ago, but you know, maybe it'll work again now, turn it back on, you know? And there's like no rhyme or reason. So if you were to, for example, have to train somebody how to do that, you would have no way, you wouldn't know where to start. You know, you're just in there like, and I think that people, it might be a little bit of like, I don't know what it is. Maybe it, for me, it was laziness of not wanting to figure out how to do the systems so I could train people and just figure out what the hell I was doing myself. But for other people, I think some people are actually like addicted to being in the ads manager all day long and feeling like they are the only person that has these, this intuitive intelligence where they can just look at the screen and, you know, Minority Report some stuff around and like make it work, which is really stressful, really chaotic, doesn't get you the best results. You can't teach anybody to do it. You can't even tell someone what you're doing yourself, let alone come up with a training manual to teach media buyers under you so you can delegate. You can't program automated rules because you aren't using rule-based thinking yourself manually to begin with. So I see people either one of the two, like a really hands-off approach where it's just like a consolidated ad account. They don't do anything with it. And then the other one is just people doing way too much. So what was your original question? Why are systems important?
Yeah, why are systems so important? Why are systems important when it comes to Facebook ads? And what are some examples of systems?
Yeah, so an example of systems would be, I mean, people make systems sound too complicated. Like I think of automated rules and checklists as kind of my systems. And obviously, you know, there's things that are, there's, you know, tools and Google Sheets and things that fit in there. But for the most part, it's checklists. It's what do you do every day when you go into an ad account? What do you do? What do you not need to do every day, but maybe you should do twice a week or once a week or once every 2 weeks or once a month and have those written down. So, so you don't get into a situation where you're like, oh, I've just tested like 20 new top of funnel audiences this week and none of them worked. And now our ROAS is down. It's like, well, and you didn't test any audiences before because you waited until things were bad before you tried to fix it. You know, we might just test one or two new top of funnel audiences per week and then ding, like check it off the list. That's what you do. Or, you know, test 5 new pieces of ad creative per week, you know, things like that. Seems almost too simple to mention. But if people don't have an organized approach to do it, it just gets overlooked and then they don't do it for a few weeks. And then the next week they try to make up for that by doing it all at once. And it's just a mess. Or like, you know, budget adjustments. I just see people do crazy stuff with budget adjustments where it's just like, oh, this is doing good. Let's crank this one up. This one's not doing good. Let's pause it. I just don't know how you could be efficient with a budget that way at all. Like we use automated rules for all of our budgets, you know, like if the return on ad spend and the cost per unique add to cart or initiate checkout looks good in the past few days, increase the daily budget by 15%. If it's getting a little bit below our goal, decrease the budget. And then all of a sudden you have an ad account that is like, you know, you get more traffic in top of funnel, and your bottom of funnel starts doing good. So the bottom of funnel budget raises and then top of funnels kind of goes down a little bit. You're not driving as many add to carts. So the budget on your add to cart, your cart abandonment ad goes down and it's all just like on autopilot. And a way better job than I could have ever done manually. I mean, you remember when me and you had to do this shit before automated rules, like, or even like
the we spend hours in an Excel sheet, even mapping that out, what that looks like.
Yeah, it was crazy, you know, and like we were trying to do it. We were I mean, to our credit, we were doing it like as responsibly as we could manually. But this was before there was even a return on ad spend condition in automated rules in the Facebook ads manager. So we were literally going in there like 3 times a week, like, you know, figuring out our return on ad spend manually and like, I forget what we
did. And we would base it off like cost per acquisition. And then we'd over 3 days, and then we'd look at it and all of a sudden those numbers change. So we'd have to go redo every single rule because it didn't allow you to edit it.
Yeah.
Go redo all the rules again.
What a mess.
Yeah. What a mess.
But the vast majority of media buyers don't use automated rules still. So like, I don't know what they're doing, to be honest.
And even even to that sense, I mean, like, once you start managing big budget, you're not going to be in front of your computer all day, right? Like, you're going to be away. You have to eat lunch. You have to sleep. Without safety nets, I mean, how are you being even responsible to the people that are giving you money to run with? What are you going to sit there and say, sorry, it spent $50,000 like between 10 p.m. and 12 a.m.? I'm sorry, I was sleeping at the time.
I've seen it happen a lot of times. So yeah, you need automated rules, at least for budget adjustments and some, like, whatever they call them, like fail safe rules or something, for, like, in case you miss something, just to make sure that some end doesn't go and spend thousands of dollars and not meet your goal and you just kind of like didn't notice it or something. Like, what a nightmare. But yeah, so those are examples of systems. It's basically just checklists, and like automated rules to me don't seem different than the checklist. It's just automate. So we make our checklist. Like, the checklist would have had increased budget by 15% every day if the ROAS is above X, whatever. that would have been part of the checklist anyways. So to me, automated rules, I think people are intimidated because they think it's like, I don't know. We were talking about this on our group call earlier today. Like, I think that tech people and digital marketing people make things sound more complicated than they are because, I don't know why, your guess is as good as mine.
Or they're worried that, you know, why would my client pay me if I have automated rules doing the work?
Right. What's the alternative? Like, are you paying me to work 80 hours a week? Or
you pay me for results. That's what you're paying me for.
Right. Right. So what was I saying about the group? I forget, but yeah, automated rules to me are, they're not like some crazy thing that we like machine learning and AI and blah, 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 software automation. Like, all it is automating a manual task that was on the checklist that we would have done anyways, you know? Yep. If there's a piece of software that can test two new top of funnel audiences for me per week, based on the way that I would choose which audiences to test, I'd automate that too.
Of course.
You just can't. There's a lot of stuff. Most stuff you still can't automate, but you should be taking advantage of everything that you can automate. So you basically just make a checklist. What do you do every day? What do you do every week? What do you do every month? And then look through that stuff and say, what if it can be automated? And it's going to be a small percentage of it that can, but some really important stuff for sure.
And if you're especially to scale, I think the ability to automate certain tasks in a business period, let alone Facebook ads, gives you the ability to scale.
Yeah, it gives you the ability to scale. And like you said, it gives you the ability to sleep. You know, you have time to sleep and you sleep better because you know that you're not going to wake up to something on fire. And then if you're like a brand or even an agency, once you have your systems down, you kind of know what you're doing. It's just less stressful. And then you actually have time that you can, I mean, A, you can not work if you want to. Like, I'm not like a workaholic, you know. Or you can, if you own a brand, you can spend time on creative or on, you know, landing pages, pre-sale pages, whatever, like this other stuff that are big points of leverage that you used to not have time to do because you were in the ads manager like many hours per day. Like, you don't need to run one account. You don't need to be in the ads manager for that account 5 hours a day. Like, if you do, I would argue you don't know what you're doing.
So let's talk about what's working now. Like, you've seen a lot of e-commerce accounts. You're coaching a lot of e-com students. What do you see working best across e-commerce accounts right now?
Using broad audiences, top of funnel, and using your time to test more creative, using dynamic creative, I would say. When I audit accounts, a lot of people are testing a lot of audiences. Sorry, I know this is like a more, you've been doing more like general business podcasts lately. So hopefully people understand like what top of funnel means, but just like your prospecting ads, your ads to people who've never heard of you before or whatever. What's working best for those is broad audiences, like really big audiences, either really big lookalike audiences or even just like a really broad demographic audience. Like everybody in these 20 states that is this gender between ages 20 and 50. That works really well. But when I audit people's accounts, they are usually testing so many top of funnel audiences, it's crazy. Like all these interest audience, they'll be testing 10 different audiences and all of them are over 15 million people. Like
that's most of the country at that point that you're targeting. So I think that people should stop looking for unicorn audiences and spend their time trying to find unicorn creatives.
Love it.
And people are worried about overlap too. They're like, well, I already have this one ad set to this 10 million person audience. Like, I can't do another one to that, another ad set to that same audience because, you know, it'll be the same 10 million people. I'm like, you're spending $200 a day. You're not hitting 10 million people. Are you kidding me? You know how much money you'd have to spend for that overlap to become an issue? Especially if it's a lookalike audience based on like your past purchases or something. Like, those audiences continually regenerate every few days. It's not even the same 10 million people. So people are way too worried about like audience fatigue. I don't think that audience fatigue, unless you're spending millions of dollars, usually isn't an issue.
But there is an issue with creative fatigue.
Absolutely. When people think their audiences are fatiguing, it's their creative fatiguing most of the time. So once you have these systems in place, you know, you quit trying to test 1,000 new top of funnel audiences. Like I said, we test like one a week, honestly. And, you know, once you find your best performing 10% lookalike audience, like you spend millions of dollars on that audience profitably without having to spend too much of your testing budget trying to find new audiences. Cause it's not going to fatigue and you're not going to, if you have like 5 lookalike audiences and you're getting like a 1x ROAS on all your ads, you're not going to find some weird other 10 million person lookalike audience with some weird lookalike stack you heard about on the internet. Like, and it's going to all of a sudden that 1x ad is going to be like a 3x. Like, it's never going to happen. So find a few of your best performing really big audiences top of funnel, and then just spend your time testing creative. And because you can, so I said, you can't find usually a unicorn audience, especially top of funnel, but you can find a unicorn creative. You can find some weird combination of headline and image and button type that you didn't even think would work.
And it doesn't have to be unicorn. It doesn't even have to be unicorn, right? The beauty is with audiences, you're searching for a unicorn, but with creative, you have the ability to just test and go wild. You don't even need a unicorn because you could have many creative that work. You could have many different offers and angles that work. You don't even need a search for a unicorn. So I think to your point, what you're saying, and you said so well, is like, what would be a better use of your time? Looking for a unicorn or pumping out things that will help get you the results that a unicorn would have got you in the first place?
Exactly. Yeah. And dynamic creative is awesome for that, for finding those. Yeah. It's not like, I mean, sometimes you do find one weird ad that just works really well. Like we had, for the supplement company that I have as a client, like they had all these really highly produced videos and all this stuff and stop motion and cartoons. And we tried all this stuff and, turned out just like the iPhone photo of like their secretary holding the the chocolate bar. We spent like $400,000 on that single ad just because it outperformed the other stuff. But that was a while ago before we were testing as much dynamic creative. And you're right, now that we're doing more dynamic creative and now that we have better processes and systems for like testing new stuff on an ongoing basis, we're always finding new ads that work well. So yeah, just keep testing and you're gonna find them. And dynamic creative is dope because you could have like, you know, 3 images, 3 texts, 3 headlines, and be split testing a shop now button versus a learn more button. And I mean, the way that math works, you just multiply it out. 3 times 3 times 3, 9, 27 times 2 buttons, 54. So that's 54 ad combinations that Facebook is running for you. And then you can look in the breakdowns and see which ones are doing best and pull the post IDs from the best performers. And, you know, you're going to find some stuff that's why I like to try weird stuff too. Like try a headline angle that is like vastly different than what we've been doing. Or if we're running all videos, try a single image. Or if we haven't, you know, just try to test things that are very different. Or like, you know, like the buttons, for example, like most e-commerce people do a shop now button. We have a couple accounts where we only do learn more buttons because that's just what works better. And we probably wouldn't have tested that on our own if we were just mocking up 5 new ads per week. But with dynamic creative, it made it much easier to test that very fast.
What metrics are important when it comes to an e-commerce account? I know clients are so focused on return on ad spend, and as a performance-based agency and someone that tries to get results, ROAS and return on ad spend is super important, but we know there's deeper components to it. So
yeah. So I would say that if you're a brand, or even if you're an agency, like a lot of our clients just look at, because you know they're advertising on other channels too, so they'll just look at how much did they spend on Facebook and Instagram ads compared to their overall revenue, which I call like the RAS as opposed to ROAS, revenue over ad spend. So for a brand, I think that's the most important thing. For an agency, especially if you're performance-based, return on ad spend is the most important thing. And then when you're actually optimizing your account, the good news is you don't have to look at that many metrics, because like click-through rate has almost no correlation with return on ad spend, which is funny. There's so many metrics in the ads manager, it could be really overwhelming, but you don't need to use them all. Like you just look at basically return on ad spend or CPA, whatever your goal is, cost per unique initiate checkout, cost per unique add to cart. And then anything past that really doesn't really have that much of a correlation with return on ad spend. So like I just make my decisions and make my rules based on those three metrics, honestly, because you could say, well, this ad doesn't have a good add to cart price, but it's got a really high click-through rate. Okay, who cares? It's not making you money. Or this one has a great engagement rate, or whatever the newest metric in the ads manager is, you know, engagement score or relevance score or whatever. And most of that stuff just doesn't really matter that much. And I guess it's all about, you know, what your goals are. If you're just trying to do a branding play and get as many eyeballs as you want, then as many eyeballs as you can, then maybe you want to look at this other stuff, percent video view watched, all that stuff. But I don't look at barely any of it anymore, because for all of our clients, our goal is return on ad spend. So I'm only looking at metrics that actually have a correlation with that, which luckily for us, aren't that many. Makes life easier when you don't have to obsess about click-through rate, you know, because you could get an ad that has a high click-through rate and drives a lot of traffic to your site, but it's the wrong kind of traffic. It's window shoppers. It's people that, you know, like I had like a lingerie brand one time, and like, you know, some of their ads just had like, you know, based on how racy or attractive the photo was, get a bunch of clicks, but those people weren't buying. So that's an extreme example of how click-through rate has really nothing to do with who's buying.
When it comes to taking on a client or someone now looking to scale, what are the essentials? Like, what does an e-commerce brand need to have? Or when you even look at an account, what are you looking for to see if there's a scalability factor there?
Well, like I said, we're not working with as many new clients anymore, so we can usually just see what's going on, what they're currently doing. And as long as their product is like, you know, mass market enough, that there's a need for it, or a demand for it. If they're selling $20,000, $30,000 per month with a good return on ad spend, there's no reason that you can't sell $100,000 a month with a decent return on ad spend. So I guess I just look at the past behavior to predict the future behavior. But as long as you're not selling something super niche, but I don't know, I've done that too. I mean, I've sold $100,000 a month on a horror movie themed board game, or a thing to, you know, teach children how to play chess, stuff that you would think is pretty niche, but you know, there's like, what, however many people on Facebook in America now, like 350 million, like it's a lot of people, you know? And if you're selling something for $100, you only need 1,000 people to buy it, and you're making selling six figures a month, you know?
So for the listeners listening in, we'll kind of wrap it up here. If they want to join your coaching program, who's the coaching program for? What are you looking for?
I'm looking for people who are already spending like more than $20,000 a month on ads for a successful e-commerce brand, just like we were talking about here, because then I know that there's potential. If you're already getting the results, you can get more of the results for sure. And I also want people to make their money back from the course pretty quickly. So if you're spending $100,000 a month on ads, and you you know, find four or five little things in this course that you haven't, I mean, hopefully it'd be a lot more, but you know, you find some little tweaks that you can make, like, oh, I was doing this wrong or this wrong or this wrong. Like, you can save tens of thousands of dollars in wasted ad spend each month, like pretty quickly. So, I can charge like a high ticket price for a course because the people that are signing up for it are going to make that money back like very quickly by implementing what we do. And that's why it's, again, back to why I'm not a good salesman, but why I can sell this and why I can sell our services, because it's an ROI offer, right? It's like, if you do this, you will make back much more money than you spent on it. And I can feel good about selling something like that all day long versus here's, you know, pay us 50 grand to build you a new website that may improve your revenue or it may not. Might hurt it. Who knows?
I love it. For the listeners who want to reach out to you, Justin, how do they find you?
Yeah, just go to my website, adhocmedia.co.com. And yeah, I got a type form survey in there, both for potential clients and for people interested in the coaching program.
And I highly recommend you to do it. You know, the listeners listening and really want to get better. Justin is someone I continually learn from. Super happy to call him a friend. Whenever I get stuck in anything, he's one of the first phone calls I make. So trust me, you're in good hands with Justin. And so really, man, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for sharing your expertise with everyone. And you know, I appreciate the hell out of you. So
yeah, man. Love you, bro. It's been a long journey. It's been fun to watch, watch you and do it together. So thanks for having me and congrats on the baby.
Love it. Thank you.
All right, bro. Talk soon.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for paying attention to that episode. Look, if you enjoyed it and you're looking to scale your business to the next level or just a bit stuck, we've worked with businesses and helped scale them past seven figures. So we know a little bit what it takes to grow your business. So if you're looking for a free strategy call with myself or a team member to help you and help get you unstuck or help scale your business, head on over to jportnoy.com and book a free strategy call. I'll see you then.